This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne.
Welcome back to Embracing Change. Hi, I'm Jennifer Osborne here with Lakrita Bowman, and we are continuing our season 8, talking about some of the messages that you've delivered over the last 2 years at different locations with different audiences. And today is a really fun one. It was the after show from where you appeared on The Wiz FM. And that was a really fun day.
Being
there behind the scenes and meeting Raven and Tropicana.
Tropicana, that's her name, Tropicana. Because we met her at, matter of fact, we met Tropicana. She was so struck by my message at the Restore Community Summit.
Oh, the episode before, right?
That message. That is why she was so connected to it, because she could relate to it because of some family members that she in turn invited me to come on her show.
Yeah, and the afternoon drive. Sorry, I have to think about how the radio folks refer to their their episodes. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. And so then after you appeared on the show, which we don't have any recording of that, afterwards you had a video interview with Raven, which was her co-host.
Exactly.
And so that was a very fun, like bubbly type of interview. So, and she asked you just some further questions, I think, that she didn't ask you in the actual interview.
Right. She just kind of expounded on my sharing of that message on the radio.
Yep. So here it is, the Wiz Trop House after show.
Hey everyone, it's Raven, or as I'm known in the Trap House, Little Ravy Baby. And today we have Lakrita Bowman with us from the City Gospel Mission. You just got out of the Trap House. You now have your keys to the Trap House.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yay!
So now this is just the behind the scenes, and I just want to be able to let you share your whole story. You have an amazing story. Trap has told me about it for days, for weeks since she's met you, and I've looked on your website, and it's amazing what you're doing. And your story hits so many people, pulls so many strings on anybody's heart, whatever they've been through. And I just want to give you time to explain and give your story. Everyone sees the after, but no one ever sees the before.
Yeah.
Or they don't really think about it, or they don't really ask. They're just like, oh, like how are you gonna keep growing? How are you going to make more money? That's all they really care. So I just want to give you time to share your before.
Thank you. Well, you know, my before story is what it is. It is like I'm just learning, really, after almost now, it'll be 27 years, or was 27 years, on September 28th, 2019, that I got out of prison. Yeah. And so this journey has been 27 years long. And let me just tell you, but really, as I just turned 59 on September the 12th.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I realize I've been on the journey for 59 years. In 1960, my mom had me. Then about 3 weeks later, she dropped me off to her best friend and never came back. And her best friend raised me. And I thank God for Mary Harlan Williams. I do. She did the best she could with what she had. And she ended up with a boyfriend, and that boyfriend raped me continuously for about 3 years. And I would run away, and I would try to tell my mom what happened. And the sadness is that back in that time, when I was seven, it was 1967, so back in that time of year, children were seen and not necessarily heard. And so what happens in this house stays in this house, and nobody gets to tell about it. And so when I would tell him I was going to tell on him, he immediately found a way to shut me down. And so what he did, he took money from his own wallet and hid it in my dresser drawer, and then told my mom that he saw me going into his wallet. And he said to her, you know, if you search her room, I'm sure you're going to find money in there she shouldn't have. And she did. And she found, and she believed that I had stolen his money. And it was the way that he manipulated deceptively. I mean, it was a deception that he showed me how lying and stealing was a part of life. And from there on, I realized that I needed to begin my own journey as lying. you know what I mean? And not telling people what really was going on with me, because nobody was going to believe me. And so from there on, as I began to run away from home, in 1960, probably 68, and six, through 68 and 70, I would say, I was about 10 years old and I was running away. And they took me in front of the court systems. And when they took me in front of them, they asked my mom, and she was not a very educated woman. And they asked her, could they put me in a study program? And she thought they were sending me to a school. Mm-hmm. And what they did was put me at Longview State Hospital.
Wow.
And it was so strange, because when we got there, I'll never forget the day that we drove up into this under tunnel place, and they called it the Child Study Center, right off of Paddock Road here in Cincinnati. And when we got there, they showered us and did everything and put us in these gowns. And then the next thing I know, we were going for medication call. And they were giving us Thorazine, liquid Thorazine, four times a day.
Wow.
And they, what we learned later, after a while, was that what they were doing was doing a child study for behavior modification. Mm. And there was about 14 of us in that situation. And because our parents were ignorant and didn't know what was going on, the systems of this world was able to get away with it. And so through that, we had shock treatment, electronic shock treatment, Thorazine, just to see if they could change the pattern of our brains. Because they believed that we were defiant children. And so therefore, maybe we could change and have this study. So we would go, and they would do this, then they would put us in a room and study our behaviors, and it was over and over. And it's so amazing, because we were only supposed to be there for 30 days, and we ended up there for about 27 months. People always ask me, how did you get out? Well, I got sick, and I had to go to General Hospital that they now call UC. Oh. And my mom had to come to sign for consent. Mm-hmm. And she told them that she had lost track of me in the system, and that she didn't know where I was. She knew I was in Longview, but couldn't get connected. And long story short, it got me out of there. But by that time, I was 13. I was resentful. I was angry at her. I had already dealt with the rape, you know, so it was like from that to that. Both of them were very traumatic experiences. From there, I just began to really close off to people. And I just didn't believe that I could trust them. And from there, my life of crime and self-sufficiency started. And then I started stealing, and I became a thief. And that stealing, writing checks, theft by deception, fraud, I did all of that. Because I feel like now I was a byproduct of what someone else taught me to do. And so from there, I went to prison. My first prison stay was 18. And from 18 all the way until I was 32, I was in and out of prison.
Wow. And you shared on the Trap House that you got five numbers.
Exactly. I've been incarcerated five different times. From my last crime, from my first time ever in prison, I got an 18-month sentence. And I did about 10 months of that sentence. And then I got out. Then I went back. I had a 4-year sentence. And I did 2.5 years. And then I got out. Probably was out about 6 months to a year. Went back, had a 5-year sentence. Then I ended up having a son, and my son now is 35 years old, and had him. And I thought that would keep me. Come on, because see, I wanted to do something different than had happened to me, so maybe the child would keep me.
Right.
But what I realized is that unless you are willing to really work for what you want, even outside things can't keep you from the inside enemies that you have inside. And so I had a son. I stayed out a little while. He was about 10 and a half months old. I went back to prison and stayed in prison that time about 7 years. Then got out and was out about a year and went back. And then this fifth number that I got in ORW, which is Ohio Reformatory for Women in Marysville, Ohio, is when I had my aha moment. And I know now it was God. But I also know that it was truth. Truth was coming after me to say, I need you to look at the pain you're really in and why you're in it. And if we can go back and unravel that pain, we might can find some new truths and take you on a new journey. Was it hard? Hell yes. Did I want to? Hell no. But was it necessary? Of course. People always say the end product, as you said in the beginning. I am telling you, I went to Talbert House. And when I went to the Talbert House, it was a 93-day program. Now, how do you get better in 93 days? I don't know. But what I realized is that it wasn't about the 93 days. It was about what was I going to do in those 93 days. Mm-hmm. And I remember finding a counselor talking about healing the child within me, healing my trauma, healing my wounds, beginning to look at my life in a different perspective. I remember not knowing what would be my next steps. I had never really had a real job. You know, I'm 33 years old. I had never had a legal job. All my jobs throughout my life were criminal jobs, so I had never had one. And my first job was at Fisher's, the restaurant. I remember going in and telling them that I was an ex-thief and that I shouldn't probably go in the cash register because I wasn't sure.
You didn't trust yourself.
I didn't trust myself. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't sure. So I think change comes in with being honest. Mm-hmm. And so I remember the person, his name was Dave, and he said that what he admired about me most was that I was honest. I said, because honey, I might steal that money out of that cashier and I'll probably be right back in the penitentiary. And I really don't want to go back to jail. And so he made me a host. And I remember it's right there on 4th Street downtown. And it was just so amazing how he worked with me. And so that was my first job. And then I got a promotion and they let me become, finally he came to me probably about 7 months later into the job. And he said, what do you think? You think you're ready to be maybe not a full cashier, but just through lunch hour? And he let me become a cashier through the lunch hour. And that was a gradual process to show me that I could begin to trust that I wanted something different. And in that moment, I realized that I could be a productive, whatever that meant, meaningful, purposeful person in this community. And from there, I went to nursing school and got my certification for nursing assistant. Got a real job. I remember making $10 an hour. I was like, I was rich. And it was honest. I met my husband of now almost 26 years. My son, let me just tell you this story. I had not seen my son for about 5.5 years. I didn't know where he was because his father had taken him and took custody and told me I would never see him again. So on my wedding day, a knock came on the door in the dressing room where I was getting dressed. And just to give a little more backstory, I ended up getting into the Fellowship of Christ Emmanuel Christian Fellowship with Bishop Michael E. Dantley. And I was going to catechism classes, learning spiritual truths, going through a self-help group, which is NA and AA. I was just doing whatever I needed to do. I was eating up everything because I knew that I needed to invest in myself.
Right.
And so Bishop Dantley told me to pray for my son's father's heart. I was like, boy, pray for somebody. he need to do the right thing. And he said, no, you need to just pray for him. And so that was probably April of that same year of 93. I got married in October. And on October 23rd of 1993, a knock came on the door in my dressing room when I was getting married. And they asked me to open the door, and I wouldn't. And finally, they persistently asked me. I opened it, and there stood my 9-year-old son that I had not seen in 5.5 years. That let me know that prayer works. And that let me know that there's a God out there bigger than me that hears me, that knows my intent, and he can answer it by way of other people's hearts. That's how he moves. And so from there, I just began to go through the process, and probably about 2 more years after that is when I got the vision of having the courage to change that is now the Ministry of City Councilmanship. And I realized that I wanted, not in a good way, wanted to help other people. I'm not going to say that I just totally jumped in there. Oh, right. I want to help. No, because I didn't, again, scared, didn't know if that was going to be something that was going to pull me back into behaviors that I didn't know if I was really truly finished with.
Right.
And so I remember when God invited me on that journey, and he said, you have the tools inside of you to help other people find the light if you'll let me lead you through. And I was like, oh, no, I don't want to fool them people. If they anything like me, I don't want to fool with them. And long story short, eventually I said yes, and I started the home in my husband and our first home that we had. We brought 5 unrelated women into our home, and we started living with them and loving on them and caring for them to get them out of the streets, out of prison, off of drugs. And from there, City Gospel Mission saw what we were doing, and then they came and asked would we be willing to join forces with them. And from there, we have been doing that ever since. And so we started with 5 unrelated women. We now have 51 women we can serve at one time. We have 51 men we can serve at one time. God has blessed me to write a book called Breaking the Cycle of Self-Abuse. It journals my, navigates my story from beginning to end. It has a workbook in it. I have another book called Unlocking the Incarcerated Mind. It's a yearly devotion that I'm getting ready to really dive into and work on and get out there. But primarily, I have a play that they just did at the Aronoff Center with my story called Chameleon. And it journals my story. It's a one woman's play. We're going to be bringing that back up again. It's just that I got a big major campaign that I'm getting ready to work on for City Gospel Mission to actually expand the women's program, because I believe that as the opiate epidemic and the brokenness continues to happen, that and that as prison reform is coming down, you have to be prepared for the people. And I think too often what we do is we wait till it happens and then we're not prepared. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm preparing as I wait for it to happen.
That's beautiful and smart. Beautiful and smart. People don't think like that. They really don't.
Yeah.
As you said, they wait till it happens. They're like, oh, we should probably do something.
Yeah, but so I'm preparing for it before it happens, because I'm kind of like always praying, because I know prayer works, and yes. I'm always asking God what's next. I'm always saying, what is the signs of the times? What are we in? But I realize that right now we're in just a community of people that are broken. I think we look at scarcity and we think that there's not going to be enough for us. So we're all selfish sometimes, mm-hmm. including me. I'm learning that selfishness comes in many forms. And so we have to decide and ask our question. I was just the other day, I was eating some donuts, which I don't eat a lot of sweets, but I was eating the first one and it was delicious. And I got ready to reach for the second one. And I stopped myself and I said, why am I eating this? What's going on inside of me that's eating me, that makes me get off of what I know is best? You know, I know that I should not eat 2 big donuts behind each other. There's nothing wrong with one, mm-hmm. but why am I eating the second one? Mm-hmm. And I realized that the reason I was eating it is because I'm faced with a lot of self-development, a lot of internal choices that, you know what, and the donut is not gonna change those choices. So I said to myself, but I'm gonna eat this donut anyway because I want to. And I did. And then I said, but I won't eat one tomorrow. Right. And I've learned that you have to stop and ask yourself, why am I doing what I'm doing? How is this affecting? What is really eating me? What's going on with me? What am I running from? What am I trying to fix? What am I trying to numb? What am I trying to discover? You know, any of those things. And it can be shopping. It can be drinking. It can be spending. It can be all kind of things. So I'm just learning in this season, my life, is that I want to know why I do what I do and be aware. I want to be awakened to everything. I want to be considerate. I want to have empathy for other people. These are all new tools. People think, I'm 59. I tell people, I say, but these are tools that I am just learning, where my development stops. See, people think just because you grow up chronologically, if you don't grow up emotionally and developmentally, wherever it happens, wherever the trauma happens, wherever you stop growing or developing, you got to go back there and reconnect to those things and regrow up again. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Stick to it. it's amazing. I'm over here like, wait, can you help me out? I'm thinking like, oh. It's amazing. But you said you realized you had to understand the truth mm-hmm. and be truthful with people to get help, yeah. for people to understand where you're coming from, to move on. For those who are scared of their own truth, to scared to reach out to you, to the City Gospel Mission, what do you have to say to them to just take that leap? How can they take that leap?
I think people have to take that leap primarily by way of saying, am I in enough pain where I am to want to find comfort for where I need to be? I'm going to tell you a story. I just heard this today on something I was listening to, and it was a dog, and he was laying on a nail. And the dog was mourning, like, and it was just kind of like whining. So a man walked up and said, is something wrong with your dog, sir? And he's like, yeah, he's laying on a nail. He said, well, why don't he get up? He said, it ain't painful enough yet. Mm. See, he said, when he gets painful enough, he'll move. Right now, he's only in the moaning stage. I think most of us are just in the moaning and the complaining stage. When the pain gets great enough, we'll get up and move. For me, the pain was great enough. And I didn't even know it, but it was. So I got up and I moved out of the bed of affliction that I was in. And I began to try to look at where I needed to be. And I continue to do that. 27 years later, when the pain gets too great, people move. But if they don't want to, then they will die in the pain they're in. So I would just encourage people to look at the level of pain they're in. Is the pain worth where you are? Right. Are you willing to do something else different to get some different outcome? They say if we always do what we've always done, we'll always get what we always got. If we always be who we always are, we always become who we are. We have to do something different. So I would encourage people to take the risk, because is it any different than the pain you're already in? They say we were born with two fears. One of loud noise and the other of falling. All the other fears we had, we created them or we experienced them. So I'm just saying, if we already know how to navigate loud noises and we already navigate falling, what else is there to do? You've already fallen down. Just learn how to get back up and ask of someone else to reach down and help you and steady your feet until you can walk on your own.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's Ms. Bowman, Lucretia Bowman from the City Gospel Mission. How can people reach out for those who are ready to get back up?
I think that they can reach out by calling us at 345-1020. That's our main number. They can also call us at 345-1094. They can also reach out on our website, and which is our website is www.citygospelmission.org.
Okay.
So our website, if you just Google with all the technology, City Gospel Mission, it'll tell you all of our information. But I'm just asking you, if you are in pain, I'm asking you to please consider to move out of the position you're in so you can get another one.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
This has been the uncut Trap House part.
Hi, guys. Every week we get the honor of spending time with you, sharing our hearts, and offering insights into all the ways we get turned around as people, and hopefully showing an escape route to better choices. Another place that is offering the same type of path for better opportunities is City Gospel Mission. Since 1924, they've been a beacon of hope to the homeless, those recovering from life-controlling issues, youth, and to those needing job services. If you'd like to volunteer or donate, you can visit www.citygospelmission.org. That is www.citygospelmission.org. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2021 by Lakrita Bowman.